Good evening. Tonight's lecture is Life After Life, speaking about four, or if the time will allow us, about five different topics which connects to the soul and the body, and what happened to a person after he passed away, and things that we all are curious and interested to find out about. It's an opportunity tonight to try to conclude everything that connects to it in one lecture. Thank you. This lecture was designed based on two sources. One source is the scientific world, as we all know, the parapsychologists, the doctors, the cardiologists, all the people that deal daily in hospitals with people who died and sometimes came back to life, which we call clinical death, out-of-body experience. And the second source is the Jewish Torah. For those who did not know, the Jewish Torah was given in Mount Sinai in front of millions of Jews 3,317 years ago. According to Judaism, this world is 5,766. That's all, 5,766 years old. As a whole lecture, just to explain how the difference between the Jewish age to the world, to the scientific Goyish theory, it's a huge difference. It's not the time to get into it. Just in one sentence to explain, the difference between us and them is we do not base anything based on theories and guesses. The scientists today, every age they give to the world is based 100% on assumption. They didn't bring one proof yet. From the beginning of their researches, which was tens or hundreds of years ago, until today, not one scientist was able to bring scientific, valid proof to the edge of the world. Everything is an assumption. Therefore, we don't have time to waste about every day new assumption. One thing is, for someone who has a common sense, just to realize that you have thousands of scientists all over the world. And you probably will never find two scientists that made the same research to find the age of the world and came to the same age. Everybody comes with a different age. It ranges anywhere from 10,000 years old to trillions of years. Trillions of years. And obviously, the truth is only one truth. The world is X amount of years. That's it. It cannot be two ages to the world. Therefore, shouldn't waste too much time. Everything we say in the Jewish tradition is based on knowledge that we receive once from the Creator of the world, and later on was not really developed, or nobody added any other stuff to it. It was basically the same knowledge from the beginning to now, which was passed from generation to generation. Therefore, our rabbis that write the book today, or 500 years ago, or 1,000 years ago, never took credit for any of their knowledge. The credit, nobody ever came and say, I found that. It's my research. Look what I discovered, like they do. Everybody in our Torah, from A to Z, you always see in the introduction to his book, thank you for God, thank you for the rabbis that taught me my Torah, and for my rabbi, and his rabbi, until Moshe Rabbeinu. So nobody really claimed that he renew anything. And that's something to think about. Tonight's lecture, we want to focus on one thing. Is it life after life, yes or no? Until 20, 25 years ago, if someone claimed in colleges that actually there's life after life and people are actually not dying, they just, their spiritual image, what we call the soul, is moving somewhere, people would look at him as a weird person, somebody not serious. This somebody we cannot rely on. Today, however, 25 years approximately later, the picture is completely the opposite. You cannot find one serious scientist or parapsychologist in this field that deny or contradict the fact, not the theory, the fact that there is life after life, and actually life continue after the exit of the soul from the body. The soul exists somewhere, they cannot tell exactly where. They are trying, they are checking, but they know for sure, and we will see how they know. They know for sure that the soul of a person, the spiritual image of the person, which is the real me, when you say I love, I hate, I miss, you don't really mean the body, the molecules. The body of a human being worth less than $1.50. If you take the iron, the salt, the minerals, the water, the flesh was made from all these things, you know, everything, and you buy it by a chemist, you will find that it's probably worth to the price of a slice of a pizza. And everyone knows that when a person died, his parents don't go to court to sue the driver that hit him with his car for $1.50. If that was the case, nobody would ever sue for anything. It's a waste of time. People sue for millions or tens of millions or sometimes even more. Because life, it's not the body. Today everyone understands it. More and more people realize in the last 25 years that actually life continues. We are going to show some of the greatest and the most famous parapsychologists that did their researches and proved beyond any reasonable doubt that life continue. And later, I will prove, hopefully, Bezrat Hashem, that everything they found, with no exception, plus a lot more, we always had in our Torah as Jews, we had the privilege and the honor and the merit to just receive from our parents and grandparents, from generation to generation, all this knowledge. As a matter of fact, once we begin to learn the Torah, even in pre-1A, or first grade, the first thing we teach our children in schools, in yeshiva, is the way God created the world. 6 days of creation, we know the story, in a 7-day strike, there was the Sabbath. And right in the first chapter of the Torah, there's a description how God created Adam, first human being in history. Remember, that was 5,766 years ago. From his time until today, we go by chronologic order, which is, we add all the ages of all the people who mention in our Torah, how many years they live, and based on that, until the time of Beit HaMikdash, and from then we have a count of the years, and we come to this number, 5,766. Adam was a little bit different than us, because he is the first one that was created directly by God. From this moment on, the same thing is wife, Eve, Chava. After that, all the other peoples until today came as a result of relation between man and woman, male and female. So obviously there were differences than everybody else. But right when they created, they already had the tool, the potential to bring new spiritual images from the upper worlds into this material world. As the Torah describes in Parashat Bereshit, Perek Bet Pasuk Zayin, this is what it says. Vayitzer Hashem Elokim et Adam afar min ha'adama, vayipach be'apav nishmat chayim, vayi Adam lenefesh chaya. It's a sentence in Genesis, chapter B, verse 7. God created Adam, sent from the earth. That was step number one. Step number two, he blew into his nostrils a living soul. Vayipach be'apav nishmat chayim. We only can imagine the process, but it's clear enough to understand the process. And the third step was that Adam, the first human being, started to move. Three steps. First, there was just an image, just a physical body, with weight, with size, with color, as we know. Second step, and spiritual image, some kind of energy. Spiritual energy went through his nostrils inside the body. Like just try to imagine putting air into a balloon, how the balloon start to move. And the third step is that he started to move. That's creation of Adam. In the book of Kohelet, King Solomon, it's a part of our Bible, chapter 12, verse 7, King Solomon, with the information received from God, of course, described the reverse transaction, how a person actually died. And this is how it goes. וישוב האפר אל הארץ כאשר היה, and the sand will return to the earth as it was before. והרוח תשוב אל האלוקים, and the spirit will return to the master אשר נתנה, that gave it to him. So, we have two transactions when a person dies. The body falls on the ground. Later, it will return to the sand. As we know, everyone is buried into the sand. But the most important thing is that this is only happened after the spirit left the body and went up to that spiritual power which called God, Elohim, and so forth and so on. So this is two transactions, creation and death. We know that in our Torah we have 613 mitzvot, 248 positive mitzvot, which means that we have an obligation to practice these transactions, those mitzvot, and based on that we're fulfilling the obligation. And we have 365 restrictions, which we are not allowed to do, such as you should not kill, you should not steal. The body of a human being was created with 613 parts. 248 parts, 365 ligaments. Ligaments connect between one part to another and connect the muscles into the bones and so forth and so on. Altogether, it's 613 pieces. This is exactly the way God designed His Torah. 613 obligations, positive and negative. For each mitzvah taseh in the Torah, each mitzvah taseh connects to one part. Each restriction connects to one ligament. The spiritual image of the person, according to Kabbalah, which is the mystical part of Judaism, as the Arizal and his student Rabbi Chaim Vital wrote 500 years ago, when a person passed away, that means his soul leaves the body and starts to elevate up, back to the source. Right there, when he entered the court of heaven, which is something we will speak later about, before the trial begins, about everything he did, good or bad, just by looking at his spiritual image, you'll be able to tell, for those up there, Bet Din Shel Malah, right away which mitzvah he fulfilled and which one he wasn't. Just by looking at his spiritual image, because each mitzvah and restriction in the Torah connects to one part of the image. The image of a person actually is a similar image. The physical image and the spiritual image, which we call the soul, look exactly the same. The difference, however, is that human beings like us, with the way our eyes is designed, are unable to see spiritual images which exist around us all the time. We are unable to see them for several reasons. If I have time, maybe I'll go into it. But the regular eye cannot see spiritual images in the air, in space. Once the soul is still inside the body, we are able to see people like me and you and all kinds of physical objects. Once the soul leaves the body, the soul is able to see things it could not see before. One of the 613 obligations that we have in our Torah, believe it or not, is Lo yimatze becha shoel o v'yadoni v'doresh el hametim. In a different lecture of mine, scientific proof that the Torah was given by God, I prove beyond any doubt, that the Torah, the Jewish Torah, could never be written by any human being. as brilliant as he may be, no human being would ever was able to write such a book. The knowledge, the prophecies, the control in every little detail in nature, as we find it in the Torah, leave no doubt. Only the creator of the world could have given such a book. And this is something we cannot say about any other religious book that was given in later in history, such as Quran, the New Testament, Buddhism. This is all religions that started after us. For those who didn't know, after Judaism, which was given 3,316 years ago, there was 80,000 attempts to create new religions and cults. 80,000 religions and cults exist, to the best of our knowledge, today in the world. Just in the United States alone, we have more than 10,000 religions and cults. And we happen to have the first religion. The difference between our religion to other religion is very simple. Nobody ever tried and no one is ever able to contradict our start, our existence around Mount Sinai. The Jewish nation was standing around the mountain in front of millions of people as God came down, as it's described in Parashat Yitro in the Torah, in the third day, in the morning, with the fire, with the noise of the shofar, with some clouds, and the earth was moving. Special event. Millions of people heard the voice of God for the first and the last time in history. Every other religion that started later started with the story of one person that never had one witness to his story. Today, some of those religions, which are phony religions, takes 5 minutes to find contradictions and mistakes in every famous religion that you may mention. If you learn it, you will see how easy it is to prove. All these religions, as I said, started with the story of one person, right away with 50% doubt. The serious religions do not contradict Judaism. Nobody can contradict it. It started and it started to publish all over such an event. They just claim that later on they receive a book which continue our Torah, the New Testament, as opposed to the Old Testament, as a continuation. Also the Quran, they claim it's a continuation, not contradiction. And our books, as I mentioned, since it was proven already millions of times in history by the greatest philosophers, Jews and non-Jews, that no human being could ever write it, therefore we look at every letter in our text as a very serious, deep meaning. We can't look at that as a regular language of human being, that one day a person is in one mood and he speaks in a happy way, and the next day is in a different mood, he may describe the same story in different words. Because this is only applied to human beings. When we speak about a spiritual power that is able to do anything he wants and he has no limitation, as he described himself in our Torah, obviously the first rule that applies to him, that he's not capable of making any mistake. If we are going to find one mistake, as everybody was searching for that mistake for many, many years, and never found it, if we will be able to find one mistake in our Torah, we don't need to wait for a second chance. Right there it will be dismissed. Why? Superpower cannot make mistake. If he's able to make mistake, I cannot rely on him anymore. Therefore, once we know that everything is valid, then we can address the issues and the obligations as he requested from us as Jews, as passed to us from father to son, 3,300 years. One of these mitzvot, as I mentioned, is Lo yimatze becha shoel o veyadoni vedoresh el amitim. In our language, it means, I don't want to see in my Jewish nation, any person, any Jew, that is going to ask question from the deceased people. I do not want any one of you to communicate with the dead. For someone who has a brain in his head, first thing comes to mind is, why would he tell us something like this? Is it possible? Is it possible for me to go and speak to somebody who died 50 years ago? 100 years ago? As we all thought until 25 years ago in a modern world, the answer was no, it's not possible. It was only a theory until 25 years ago. In that case, why would the creator of the world, which is much more knowledgeable than us, he created everything, it's in his hand, why would he give me an obligation not to disturb the dead and not to communicate with them? That means I am wrong, not him. That means everything we thought until 20, 30 years ago was not correct, as we know today. That means it was always possible. And that's one of the restrictions in our Torah, as I mentioned before, 365 restrictions. That's one of them. Do not speak to the dead. Don't ask them questions. Don't call them. There's different ways to communicate with them. One called Shoel Ov. One is Yadoni. There's three different ways to communicate. In the book of Yov, it is a part of our Bible. This is what it says. Oru basar talbisheni uveatzamot vegidim teshochecheni. Teshochecheni. So what does it mean? You made me an outfit, which is skin, flesh, and bones and ligaments. That's my outfit. So that means, who am I? If the outfit of mine is the bones, the flesh, and all these things that I mentioned here, so who am I? The answer is the spiritual image, as I mentioned. It's not the body. In the book of Isaiah, Sefer Yeshayah Bet, it says like this, Min ha'adam asher neshama be'apo, to the human being that has a soul in his nostrils. Another source. This is all sources from the Torah. This is what the Oral Torah says in Masechet Kiddushin. Tanu Rabbanan, our sages, the great rabbis. This is what they say in the Oral Torah. Three partners in a creation of human being. His father and his mother, obviously, and God. The Gemara gives a whole list. We don't have time to start go over all over the parts that the father contribute and the parts that the mother contribute. The Gemara gives a list. What parts from your body came from your mother and what parts came from your father? Together it became a body. But obviously the body wouldn't be able to move and is worthless before God decided and agreed to enter the soul into the nostrils of that baby. If he wouldn't enter it, this pregnancy wouldn't last a week, maybe 2 weeks, it wouldn't last. 40 days it takes for a baby to be created. 40 days. After 40 days, it's created already. Male, female, it was decided. Up to 40 days, the Gemara teaching us that we can pray for anything we want our baby to be. Male, female, smart, healthy, and so forth and so on. After 40 days, it's a waste of time. It was decided, it was done, it's a done deal. It happened already. Tfilat Shav. The Gemara continues in Masechet Nida, this is what it says. What does the baby look like inside his mother's womb? He's folded, and there's a spiritual light, like a candle, above his head, and he's able to watch spiritual images, this is what the Gemara means, from one side to the world to the other side of the world. And as an angel, he was teaching him Torah, all the Torah from A to Z. And just when he's about to come out to the world, the angel hit with his finger, supposedly on his mouth, in his top lip. And that's some kind of a trick that makes him forget all his Torah. And I know, when you hear that, you always have in your mind, maybe it's true, maybe it's not. How do I know? Just to give you an idea, about 30, 40 years ago, the person is still alive, this person. In Israel, there was a baby that was born just when he was 1 year old, or a little bit older. He started to walk and say parts from the Torah by heart, parts from the Gemara by heart, parts from Shulchan Aruch and every Jewish book, every famous Jewish book he was quoting. Once he reached age 4 or 5, they took him to a Kabbalist. They made a meeting to decide what to do with him. And the decision was to do something and make him forget. This person is in yeshiva in Israel today, still alive. I have a book with his signature, with a letter that he wrote about that story. There are many hundreds or maybe thousands of witnesses to that story. Actually, somebody I used to learn with in yeshiva used to learn with him, an older person. You may ask, why they made him forget? Finally, a person knows all the Torah by heart. The answer is, there are many contradictions between the Chachamim in the Torah, what is the truth, in many thousands of subjects. We have rules that we receive in the Torah by God, how to determine which one is the halacha. For instance, if there's one against many, we go by the majority of the people. If one person will come with the complete knowledge as he received it from the angel before he was born, he would make an anarchy, a revolution in the world, and basically ruins the purpose of the creation. Because remember, according to our Torah, the perfectness of the creation will be only after the arrival of the Messiah. That was the idea of the new religion that started 1300 years after Judaism, which is Christianity. That their prophet supposedly, he is going to be the Messiah. That's all the religion. And they learned that concept from our Torah. That's why they were trying to prove that he's a descendant of King David, because our Torah call him Mashiach ben David. Mashiach, Messiah, the descendants from King David. It's premature now to relieve all the contradictions and the arguments. And that's one of the reasons. There's Ayin Hara involved. There's many other reasons. So the Gemara says, once he comes out to the world, everything he learned, he forgot. And he has to make his own efforts to learn. We are going now to start with the proofs. The first category that I want to speak about is clinical death, which means in professional language, out-of-body experience, according to the scientific world. According to science, to nature, death, it's a combination of few symptoms, such as no heartbeat, the heart stopped to work, no waves in the brain, oxygen does not go into the brain, no breath. Minutes after the body temperature reduced, until there's no feeling. You pinch the dead person, he does not feel anything. That's the process of death, according to the medical world. So in that case, what does it mean clinical death? Clinical death is a person that had those symptoms, or at least most of them. He was unable to communicate, no waves in his brain, no breath for minutes, and in some cases more than an hour, no breath, no waves in his brain, no feelings. In some cases it was already covered by a blanket and was on the way to the refrigerator. Some of them already arrived into the refrigerator, and there's one case in India that a person was even buried. And he came back to life. They didn't cover him yet, I guess, in the middle of his funeral. This lecture is a very long lecture. I'm not going to do the whole lecture because, as you see, after all this lecture, I'm running out of my voice because I don't feel so well. But I'm going to give, instead of 3 or 4 examples on everything I want, one, which will make it clear enough. Dr. Raymond Moody is one of the most famous parapsychologists in the world. He's from Virginia University, made a research interviewing 150 people who died and came back to life. According to science, if a person don't have breath and no waves in his brain for more than 6 minutes, then is not supposed to return as a normal human being. That's already a permanent damage to his cell in his brain, to the memory cells. And if he's going to wake up after, he may forget everything he knew or some of it. And it's going to cause him all kinds of physical problems. Can be paralyzed and etc. Dr. Raymond Moody wrote a few books, very famous all over the world, in 30 different languages. His books are translated to many languages, even to Hebrew, to English, of course, to every other language. And in his books, he brings one case after the other, proving those people were actually deaf and they were able to come back to life from somewhere. I'm going to mention some of the names, the most famous names for those who know. Dr. Carlos Ossis was investigating 877 doctors that dealing with people who are dying daily. And he wrote many books about that. He's from the United American Association for parapsychology. Very famous. Dr. Kenneth Ring, as you see, all of them are not Jews, and of course not religious. This is all scientists. From Connecticut University, Dr. George Ritchie, the president of the Richmond Academy for Medical, Dr. Elizabeth Kovler-Ross, psychiatrist, world-known psychiatrist. 20 years she reviewed over 1,000 cases scientifically, and she wrote many books and articles about it, very serious. And many, many other. We don't have time to mention all of them. I have many, many others here. Today, it's already a fact that approximately 30 million people reported out-of-body experience, that they were able to get out of their body and later return into the body. They means the soul, the spiritual image. The most interesting part of their stories that they have mutual stories. The stories are almost 100% the same by every case all over the world, every nationality you can think of, different religions, male, female, kids, even little kids. The idea to suspect and think that this is a setup, that 30 million people will unite all over the world. Remember, this started before internet even. It was impossible. All over the world in different hospitals, hour after hour, by different doctors and psychiatrists, reporting an experience that they just had, and it's all matching one to another. Is it possible to think it's a setup? I will let you decide. We move on. Let's see some of the mutual elements from their story. Step number one is the actual accident. The heart attack, whatever the case will be. Right, moments after, seconds after, the body falls on the floor or lay in bed, unable to move, and the person feels that he's flying right above his head in the room. If it's in a room, if it's in a street, he could be in the car, he's in the car, above his body. Reviewing everything just from above the heads of all the people in the room. Just imagine a person is flying right under the ceiling, watching down what's going on. And this is what they begin to say. Right after that, we saw a huge light, like a huge projector. And we felt spiritual connection to that light. Lots of love. Great feeling. This light was communicating with us without words. Telepathy. You knew what the light wants from you, and everything you wanted to tell him, you saw that he catch the message. Remember, most of these people are not Jewish. Don't suspect that I went to search for some religious people from Jerusalem to back up my lecture. I'm talking 99% of these people, at least, are non-Jews, and probably a lot of them are not religion. They have no religious background. They're just bringing a story as it happened. They were able to transfer thoughts one to another, the light and them. The next step was that they started to see some of their relatives, people who passed away years before, or sometimes even tens of years ago, are welcoming them. And they see images of people, friends, relatives, parents, brothers, and so forth and so on. Then, the next step, they reported that they saw a movie with images of all their life from A to Z. Every step in their life was passing one after the other, like a PowerPoint presentation. One after the other. This is the way they describe pictures since their babies until this moment. Clear pictures, clear messages. All of them, with no exception, at the time that the doctors reported that they're dead at this moment, they were able later, when they came back to life, to report everything that happened in a room or in a hospital in the moments that they were not there. Voice and pictures and colors. Some of them in the middle of a surgery. In the middle of a surgery, were able later to report how the doctors cut pieces inside their chest, where he saw what tools he was using, and who were the doctors at the time that he was not there that actually operated his body, or the nurses. Better than that, most of them were able to report events all around the hospital, in different floors, different rooms. Let's think for a second. If God forbid, a person would be dead right here, is it possible that 10 minutes, if he was able to come back to life, first thing we would think, oh, you dream, you just fainted. Don't worry, it wasn't dead. You fainted. Well, you had no pulse, you had no oxygen. We will find an excuse how to explain it. But one thing, we have no answer. If this person will get on his feet and say, on the top of this place, on the top of the roof, there's a broken table, and this is the color of the table, and there's some chairs. One of them is laying down, one of them with three legs. And he gives descriptions on things that are happening outside, in the hallways, in different rooms, in the street. Above the ceiling. Some of them say, as they woke up, that on top of the chandelier or the light in the room, there's a disconnected wire above the ceiling. And they open up the ceiling and they saw that the description that they give is precise. The question is, when a person is sleeping on a floor and dreams, did you ever see a person that every time he goes to sleep and to dream, he wakes up and he tells you what happened all over the rooms in a hospital with details? Show me one person like this. Where is this information coming from? That these people are able to give us exact details. I'll give some example. This is one lady. I was up. I caught what she just said when she came back to life. I saw how the doctors work on my body. I saw the electrical shocks on my chest. Every time they pressed the button, I saw my body jumping up from the bed. After a few times, I felt that I get sucked, like suction, back into the body. And I opened my eyes. I felt I became heavy and fell right down into my nostrils. And I opened up my eyes. Nostrils. The Torah says, God pushed the soul through the nostrils. We go on. I knew I'm dying. There's nothing I could do about it. Nobody heard me. I was trying to communicate with the people in the room. As I was flying in the room. I have no doubt about it. I saw my body on the operation table. I heard the doctor giving up on my life. I saw the nurse covering my face. I felt terrible. I had so many plans, I didn't want to die. I was out of my body. I knew clearly there is two possibilities. Either I stay out or maybe I'll return into the body. It was clear. All the people that reported out-of-body experience describe a tunnel in the beginning. As they enter the tunnel while they're flying through the center, it was very dark with noise of bells, rings in their ears. As they're flying through, the voice was getting louder and louder. And this is one person. I felt I'm flying inside a very dark and deep valley. The darkness was so strong, I could not see anything. I felt peace and quiet in those moments. I didn't know what to do, to fear, not to fear. Then I started to see that the tunnel becoming lighter and lighter, more light. And I realized there are circles, and I'm right in the center of those circles, flying somewhere. Another person. In the beginning, I felt very bad. Then I started to see that huge light, such a huge light. I never saw in this material world anything similar to this light. Too much light. It covers me from everywhere, from all corners. And I felt warm feeling. But I still, at the same time, was able to communicate and to see everything is happening in the operation room, in a hospital. Hearing and viewing what happened on my body down there. At the same time. Another person. It was unbelievable. Shiny. Spiritual. I felt some kind of love to this light, which I never had to any human being before. Communication, mercy. This light has such a personality, that's one Goy described, so warm and good, that I felt that I don't want to leave it. Some described that there were a line in between them to that light. And it was clear to them that once they cross that line, there's no return. As long as they didn't cross it, they knowing in their mind that there's a possibility to return to life. Another person. As he passed away, after this process, I skip, he started to see his relatives coming and welcoming him. This person wasn't a regular human being like me and you. He was a little kid. Who was the relatives he saw? A relative he didn't know. A girl, little girl, 4 years old, that claimed she is his sister. But he was a kid that never had a sister. As he came back to life in a hospital with his parents, he told his mother, "I never knew I have a sister. Her name is such and such, and she looks like that. Describe her." And the parents started to cry. And they say, "Is it true?" They say, "Yes, we didn't want to upset you. Just before you were born, she passed away from the cancer disease. And when he died, she came to welcome him. But he came back to life." Other people, many, many of them, describe all their friends and relatives that were able to come and welcome them. Some were happy for them. Some were very upset in their faces. How does the people look? An image, a spiritual image. Like you're standing next to the river, you see yourself in colors on the water, but it's not the actual thing, or by the mirror. So there's images, smiling, upset. And the best part, that those images are wearing the clothes that they were in the day they died. Some of them have blood on their chest from the accident. Right there, as they look in the day they died. That's how they look. That's the way they describe them. And this is final statement is, I saw my friend in my brain, not in my physical body. In my brain, I was able to see him. Clearly, his hands, his fingers, his legs, everything. As I mentioned before, one mutual thing, they all describe a movie from A to Z, from the beginning to the end of their life. And this is one person, this is what the statement he made. I was very, very embarrassed from a lot of the things I was shown about my life. For the first time, I realized things that I did that were good and things that I did that were bad. I thought at that moment, I wish I would have not done those kinds of things. I felt terrible embarrassment. I wish I can go back and go to that point and correct. Huge disappointment. This is a goy, non-Jewish guy. This is what he writes. Huge disappointment that I did not achieve anything in my life. Nothing. I do not know anything. I did not complete one thing from A to Z. That's the first time he was able to recognize it. Remember, if it wouldn't happen to him, he would die at age 60, 70, and never know that he wasted his life. So in a way, there was an opportunity for this guy, and he started later to say that he changed his life completely. The way he behaved, the way he acted. One other soul, when he came back to life, he described a room in a hospital in the third floor, and that woman was in the first floor in the emergency room. When she came back to life, she described a tennis shoe standing by the window in the third floor in room such and such. They went up to that room, they went by the window, and they saw between the window to the net there's a white tennis shoe as she described. They asked her, how did you know? She said, I flew up out of the hospital. I was able to see from the walls inside the hospital and outside at the same time. Plus, I still can tell you everything that happened in this room where my body is from the beginning to the end. When they put the electric shocks on her chest, she said that she heard the bones are moving, the noise that the bones are making as the body jumped from the electric. She was able to describe, but obviously she doesn't feel any feelings because she's out of the body. Dr. Elizabeth Kovler-Ross conclude: people who are missing parts in their body, such as hand, leg, when they came back to life, they were able to say that they felt complete feelings in those parts. They felt they're complete. They look at the body laying in a hospital without a leg or without two legs. But they, the spiritual image, had legs. Just the body was cut, but the piece of the soul, which was filling up the legs, still exists. Better than that, and that's the most shocking thing so far, people who are blind, some of them became blind in a young age from an accident. Some of them blind from birth. I want to speak about those two different blind people. Those who became blind age 18, age 20. When they came back to life, they describe everything that happened in a hospital in colors. It's very simple. They know what colors are. At one point in their life, they used to see. Now they could not see, but when the soul went out of the body, the limitations of those pipes, which cause the eyes, the shades of the eyes, this is the eyelashes and the cover on our eyes, the soul doesn't have this cover anymore. It's like removing the lens. The soul can see anything from all colors. I will give you an example. If we are now in this room, assume this room doesn't have any windows other than two windows in one wall. There are four walls surrounding this room. There's only two windows. Let's describe me as the soul and this room as the body. If I'm alone here in this room, that means I am the soul. And this room is the body. When I want to see what's out of this room, out of this body, I'm able to look in those two windows, I am the soul, and see one side, what happened over there. But at the same time, I cannot see what happened in this side, and the south, and the north, or the east. I can only see the south. The reason I can only see the south is because there are only two holes that letting me see into one direction. And when those two eyes are blocked, that means we cover them with the two eyes, the soul cannot see anything. It's like closing the shades in the window. You're locked in. You cannot see anything. This is the body and the soul. When I get out of the room completely, I have no limitation, no walls around me. What's the limitations of the soul? The back of my head is blocking the soul from seeing what's behind it. The sides, it's the ears, you cannot see through there. You can see from the front. People who cannot see, they really see. There's only one defect in their body. The holes, the pipe, through the soul, into the air, into the street, is blocked. Some of them were never able to see colors. They born like that, with shades locked completely. One of them, at one point in their life, they lost this ability. But the interesting part, which I find it very interesting, that some of these people that are blind from birth, when they die for 10 or 15 minutes, is when they came back to life, they also describe things in colors. And that's a shocking thing. Because when we go to a blind person who saw colors at one point in his life, we understand he has it in his computer, in his brain. He's able to recognize it. When we are speaking to a person who never saw one color in his life, if he's inside the body, the soul, you go to a blind person, you try to describe to him the color blue. Is he able to understand what blue is? You try for a million years, he won't understand. Why? The brain never recorded something that it's blue. Therefore, description will not be able to tell. In that case, how come that when the soul of that person came out of the body, he was able to see blue? That's the first clue, the hint, that actually this person, before he came to this world, maybe was in a different body that was able to see colors. And from his previous life, if it exists, we will see in a few minutes, maybe he was able to see colors, and now he's in a different box. Remember it from 150 years ago when he was in a different body. Or from 50 years ago. That's a possibility. We will check it soon. Conclusion. All these names I mentioned before, and we don't have time to read the conclusion in each one of them, they have one mutual message. We have no doubt that life continues after death. At one point in our life we had doubts. After researching, investigating, reviewing so many cases, there is not one logical answer to contradict this fact that people staying somewhere after the body is dismissed. We move on back into the Torah. That's how it's going to go. Torah, science, together, we'll put them together. For those who think there's contradiction, you will find soon that everything they find was already in our Torah, as was given by the Creator of the world. We just happened to receive it, and we happened to be lucky enough to have the merit to receive it from our fathers, and to be Jews. That's all. Rabbi Yosef, the son of Rabbi Yoshua, became very sick and passed away. This was written 2,000 years ago. His father told him when he came back to life. You see, the Gemara speaks about it as a no big deal. He came back to life. His father asked him, what did you see when you were dead? He said, people with things, we are thinking that they are the most righteous one, are not in the highest levels in the spiritual world. Those humble people that you don't pay attention, they were in a higher level. I saw an opposite world than what I thought when I was here. The Gemara says, father says, no, you didn't. You saw the actual thing. Here it's opposite. Over there, that's the truth. The Gemara continue. He say one more sentence. We will address it later. What was the sentence? He say, I heard an echo over there. Voice. What was the voice? How lucky is a Jew that come to this world with the knowledge of Torah in his hand. This is what he says. Ashrei mi sheba lekan v'talmudo b'yado. That was written 2,000 years ago. Until 25 years ago, if a goy or non-religious Jew would read that, he would think it's a story for the children, you know, for the Shabbos table maybe. Today, you can see that there's a clear knowledge here, that it was very simple for them, that there was existence of the soul out of the body. One Gemara described that one of the rabbis told his chevruta, the one he was learning with, when I die, bring all the students of the yeshiva around my body and make me a great eulogy, because I will stand right above you and listen to everything you say for me. It will comfort me. This was written 2,000 years ago. That means he knew that when he died, he will fly right above everyone and see his funeral. The Zohar, the Kabbalah, the first Kabbalah book, the Zohar, also 2,000 years ago. This is what the Zohar described. All 7 days after the death, the soul is moving back and forth from the house where he used to live into the cemetery, back and forth. After 7 days, the soul has no permission to come back home. That's it. The last connection that it had to this world is dismissed. The Gemara, Masechet Yerushalmi, this is what it says in Moed Katan Perek Gimel. 3 days, the first 3 days are critical, more than the other four of the Shiva. That's why in Judaism, by the way, we see Shiva, for those who didn't see the connection. Because the soul of that person is right above us, seeing if we really care that he died or not. Or we're just counting the money we're going to get when the phone call comes from the lawyer. They will see everything. People here, they don't see them, so they think, what do they know? This is what the Gemara says. 3 days after, the soul is flying above the body all the time. For 3 days. The Zohar, when the soul leaves the material world, it comes up to a tunnel. Which tunnel? Me'arat HaMachpela, the cave of Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and Adam. They're all buried over there. Every soul enters the next world, the spiritual world, through that Me'arat HaMachpela. This is the entrance to the world to come. They're all describing tunnel. It's dark in the beginning, and then they begin to see the light. Rabbi Dosa said, also 2,000 years ago, the Torah says in Perek Shmo, in Sefer Shmot, Ki lo irani ha'adam v'chai, no human being can see me, God says, and stay alive. V'chayem enam ro'im, when they're alive, they cannot see me. But everybody see me when he dies. Aval b'mitatam, אבל רואים הם בשעת מיטתם. This is in Midrash Rabbah, במדבר, פרשת נסו. Clear. There is nothing more difficult to the soul more than separating from the body. And a person cannot die completely until he sees for a moment the light of God. This was written 2,000 years ago in the Kabbalah, in the Zohar. And once the soul is desperate to speak to the light of God, that's the final disconnection from the material world, that moment. And then he stays without God and without the world, if he's wicked. And we'll go into it later. At the time when a person, at the time arrived for a person to die, the soul cannot go completely out until he sees the light of God. If he's righteous, that Zohar, Parashat Metzorah. I'm giving you the sources. You can write it down. If he's righteous, he has the merit to get close to the light of God and stick to it. It's a spiritual pleasure. If he's wicked, the light disappears after moments, and he stays bitter and upset, without God and without the body. At the time of death, another place in the Zohar, Parashat Vayechi, in the time of death, a person gets permission to see things he never saw in his life, and never understood why this has happened, why that. Everything will be clear. The next world, it's not a physical world. It has no edges, no borders, no limitations, no tent, no cover, no roof, only huge light that cannot be similar to any light in the physical world. I'm reading you everything I wrote here, everything I read here, is at least 2,000 years old and more. Some parts is from the actual written Torah, 3,300 years ago. The other one, as was given in our oral Torah, part of it is the Zohar, more than 2,000 years ago. And a time when a righteous person passed away, God ordered the righteous people who are already dead in the upper world, go and welcome him. And they come and they say, Yavo Shalom, come with peace. Gemara Masechet Ketuvot Kuf Dalet. And the time a person passed away, he gets permission to see his relatives and friends from the physical world and he recognizes them. Remember, all these things I read before from the scientific world is only 20 to 25 years old, all these discoveries. But here, this is all at least 2,000 years old. Everything they say is already in our Torah. And he recognizes their images. If he's righteous, they are happy for him. And they welcome him and walk with him. If not, they disappear one after the other. The Gemara in Masechet Brachot, page Chafchet, this is what it says. Moments before the president of Israel, Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, in the time of the Romans, the time of the destruction of the second temple, moments before he passed away on his bed, he told his students, prepare a great chair for the king Chizkiyahu, the king of Judah, that come to welcome me. He already saw the moments between life and death. He saw King Chizkiyahu, one of the most righteous kings ever lived, 2600 years ago, coming to welcome him. Gemara. Midrash, כשאדם נפטר מן העולם, when a person passed away, is able to see every act he did, one after the other, in order. And they tell him, this is what you did in that day, that hour. Do you confirm? And everyone are forced to confirm. You cannot lie over there. No more lies. It's not the court in Forest Hills. You know? כיוון שבא אדם להיפטר מן העולם, when a person passed away from the world, God is coming to him and say, sign on everything I showed you that you did, that it's the truth. Because you are going to pay for everything you did. And he confirmed and he signs. Yalkut Shimoni, 1800 years ago. Da ma'ale ma'ala mimcha. You should always recognize and remember. There's always an eye above you that watch over you. There's a ear that records every move you make and every beep you make. Record. Ozen shomat. Listening to everything you say. And everything you do is registered in a book. Future to come, you will have to face it. Everything you say in front of the dead person in his funeral, he hears. Until he is covered from the sand. Once you cover the body with the sand, this is the moment he cannot hear anymore everything outside. This means all the funeral, when the body is moved into the cemetery, and then until they get to the grave, and then until they put him down, only after they cover him is unable to see what's happening up there. But as long as the body is not covered, he's able to know what the people say out. Who really cries. He sees children crying. He sees everything. Mamash like a regular person. It's interesting. The Rambam says, the Torah told us to be careful not to communicate with the dead. That means it's possible. And the punishment for that, for a Jew that doing it, he dies young. That's one of the punishments. How can we do it? The Rambam explained, I don't have time to go into it, but the Rambam say, one of the ways to communicate with the dead is to lay on a grave in the middle of the night in a cemetery for 3 days, 3 nights, and then he's able to communicate with the dead people. You give the whole ceremony how to do it. I don't suggest you be brave enough to do it. The next part in the lecture is medium. Communication with dead people. Communication with dead people through a messenger, a middleman. There are few people in the world who are reported as reliable medium. The language for that is trance. There are people who are able to disconnect the spiritual image from the physical box, which is the body, and communicate with dead people as they call them and tell you the message these dead people give you. The first trance is reported in the book of Samuel. When King Saul was very nervous about the war the next day, and he went to a Goya woman in Israel, and he told her to call the prophet Samuel, as it's written in Samuel, the book of Samuel, it's part of our Bible. And through the medium, through the connection, she was telling him what the prophet tells him. And then she realized that he's the king, because he came with a custom. Because he did not allow anyone to communicate with the dead as the king. So he had to put a custom. And then when the prophet was giving the information, the prophet was standing right above. She recognized that this is the king of Israel standing in front of her. And she was fearful for her life. That's the story. What was the first sentence the prophet told the king? Why did you disturb me to bring me back to the physical world? Rashi and all the commentators explained, he was nervous because he thought maybe God is opening his court, his trial, again. And the heaven, which was there until now, maybe is about to be taken away. That's the fear of Prophet Samuel. Two of the most famous mediums in the world are Mrs. Leonora Pfeiffer and Eileen Gart, two American ladies. Those ladies were checked with all kinds of investigations. They were trying to fool them and to trick them as many times as was possible. And they wrote, after 7 years, they wrote, there's no explanation. Those women are able to communicate with the dead and tell you information. To make long things short, one of the things is, when the people were communicating through their deceased relative, through this medium, she was closing her eyes and tell them everything this friend saying. And a part of it was personal information. Nobody in the world knew it. She had no way to know this information. No way in the world. And she was able to tell the people what his dead friend is telling him. After 20 years, he's in the grave already. Those were already proven with a certificate as reliable trance medium. We move on. In part of those communications, sometimes dead people that were not called were entering and giving information to the physical world, teaching and discovering some secrets which people didn't know. As they enter the communication, the most not professional way to communicate with the dead is Ouija board, seance, putting a cup with the candles and the cup is moving on the letters. This is a way that millions of people daily calling the dead people and ask them questions. In one of the famous seances, one soul of a person, goy, non-Jew, came and said, call a telephone number, do me a favor, he says. Call this telephone number, tell my wife, blue butterfly. He didn't call that goy. It was a group of teenage who were calling their friends from the upper worlds. And this goy came and tried to pass a message to his wife. They call up the telephone number, and an old lady picked up the phone, and they told her, blue butterfly. And she fainted on the phone, by the way. Screamed and fainted. 5 minutes later, they were trying to call. When she finally picked up again, she said, who are you? They told her, we are in the United States, and this is the message we got to pass for you. She said, how did you speak to my husband? They say, we made a seance with the board, and he came through the seance. We didn't call him. We don't know him. And he gave us this message. Now, these kids were curious. What is this blue butterfly? So they asked her. So she said, my husband and I made a deal. Now, whoever is going to die first, if there's a way to send a message to the other one who's still alive, the world will be blue butterfly. That's the proof there's life after life. That you remain somewhere. And now you told me that. So this is a famous seance. It was all over the news. But there are millions of others every month in the world which we don't even hear about. One famous seance was in Israel with the president, the prime minister of Israel, the first one, Ben Gurion, and people from the kibbutz made a seance to him. And one of them almost died in the middle. It's very dangerous. He was running outside to the bathroom, public bathroom. He was in the army. And he saw his face inside the bathroom. And he fainted. It's a famous seance because everybody in Israel spoke about it. Of course, we as Jews are not allowed to do it. The Torah restricts us. But we learned from experience of others. Experiments that the Goyim did show us what the Torah already warned us 3,000 years ago. This is a description of few communications, trances that Eileen Gart made and Mrs. Pfeiffer to all kinds of people. It was registered and recorded. One other thing happens. That some way to communicate with the dead is for a person in hypnosis. Once he's hypnotized, sometimes by holding a pen, but not holding a pen the way a person writes, just holding it from the top with two fingers, the pen begins to move. It's like another hand, silent. A hand you cannot see, moving the pen and writes. In one of the famous trances with Mrs. Gard, Beethoven, Mozart, Chopin, all these classical musicians came to the seance and wrote their music on a piece of paper, even though she has no knowledge in music. She doesn't know how to write music. They were moving her hand, and when she came back to reality, they show her what she wrote. She didn't know what it is. And they told her, this is Beethoven, this is Mozart, this is that. Those people were able to move her hand and communicate with things that they did. Some of the things I tell you were published in the most famous newspapers in the world and in TV shows. I have actually a few movies. I even have pictures, famous pictures of souls and images in the air. Maybe in another time we'll be able to do it when I have my projector. The next, we're moving into the third step of this lecture, which is reincarnation. A person that move from one body to another in different generations. One of the ways to prove reincarnations is just to read in our Torah. And the word of the Ramchal is very clear. He writes that a person here is to correct his soul. Everything he damaged his soul in his previous life, he gets another chance, and he comes in a new body to correct. For instance, somebody today that his name is Yosef, if we were be able to know his previous life, then you would know in his previous life he would be Yitzhak or Avraham. different body, different image. Now he has brown eyes. In his previous life he had blue eyes. He was much taller, heavier, lighter. Sometimes it's male and female, different body, different sex. And the best part is, in the middle of hypnosis, when they hypnotize a person, this is how it's done. There are movies all over the internet about it. One of them I saw myself. And this is how it's been done. There's a person, he go to a parapsychologist that know hypnosis. And he suggests he would look in one point in the room for 15 minutes and do not think about anything, just by focusing on that dot. Eventually, he will fall in a light sleep, in a heavier sleep, but he will not really be sleeping because he will be able to talk. So he's not up, but he's not sleeping because he's talking. And it's amazing. I think that's enough. I mean, I could have just made this lecture 5 minutes giving this example, and that would make the case. But why not to gain some more knowledge if we're already here? But this is enough. A woman, 70 years old, Polish woman, sitting in a chair in the middle of hypnosis. And the doctor, the parapsychologist, tell her, let's go when you were 60 years old. Let's go back 10 years. He mentioned the year in a calendar, and she begins to talk and describe live where she is going in the middle of the street 10 years in history back. I'm in a train station. I just missed the train. The next train is in 10 minutes. I'm going to get late to work. Amazing. She's sitting on a chair, but she's describing now what happened to her 10 years ago. Then he said, let's go to age 20, 1922. Tell me where you are. She said, I'm plowing the ground in my father's field. And then let's go to 1915. She's only 12 years old. She's speaking like a little girl now. Now, Emer, she's 70 years old now. Her voice is different now. And it's filmed by a video. Later, when she comes back to conscious, they will show her herself speaking. She will hold her hand. She won't believe what's going on here. It happened thousands of times, every year, all over the world. Even in Manhattan, it's been done here. I know a woman here. I don't know where she is anymore, but she came to one of my lectures, and after that, she told me that she herself doing these things. But this is the way it's continued. Then he tells her, let's go to the year 1910. Now she's only 1 year old. And ladies and gentlemen, guess what happened? She crawled on the floor. She goes down to the floor and she starts to crawl and makes a crying like a real baby. She's 7 years old. She cries like a baby and crawls on a rug. Then he says, let's go to 1900. There's no answer. Silent. Nothing. Let's go to 1890. Silent. Let's go to 1870. Guess what happened? She begins to talk in a different language, in a voice of a man. The voice of a man. Different language. They don't understand what she said. The people there in Poland that made that, now they don't understand anymore what it is, but they recorded anyway. In some of the hypnosis, I have tens of cases he registered. Obviously, we don't have the time for it. In some of them, one of them, the person described his life almost 4,000 years ago in the generation of Pharaoh from the Torah, King Pharaoh of Egypt. What was he describing? That he is the carpenter of the king and he's in the middle of creating an eagle, a big eagle from a wood that the King Pharaoh asked him to make. And they register everything he says. And this is in an old language. Nobody understands it. Later they bring experts of languages, old languages. And later they translate what he was saying. Later, years later, the archaeologists found that eagle. And it's in a museum in Europe. That eagle that was registered in the middle of hypnosis by an ancient Egyptian was found in by the archaeologists. One famous medium was a girl, a woman, that was transferred. It's called regression, by the way. This is the expression, the professional expression. Was transferred to 1947, the days of the Holocaust in Germany. And in the middle of the seance, as they're going day after day, reverse, she described moments that everybody started to cry. What was that? She's waiting in a line for the Nazis to shoot her. She said, I'm number 17. And then she's starting to shrink her eyes and her face and holding her head and scream. Why? Because she's now live in the moments as her friends were executed. And then after a few seconds, silent. She was not talking anymore. What happened? In 1947, this moment she died. What happened to her soul? Went up. When they do not speak, based on our knowledge, is our Torah already told us that the soul sometimes wait in heaven, in the court of heaven. It's called a bank, the bank of the souls, bank of neshamot. The Gemara actually call it the goof shebeyeshbo et kol haneshamot, inside that special place it's called a goof, waiting to be reincarnated in a new body. It's not that easy, because God has to find the right couple that deserve to get that wicked person to be their son, or that person that needs specific correction. If he will be born in Queens, it's not good for his purpose. He needs to be born only in certain city in Israel. Only there. That's his correction. And sometimes there are not people, there's no people there that deserve to get such a person. So that's why sometimes these souls are waiting until they have a chance. And in between, this is what they call, they don't hold. So this is just on the top of most of the proofs that people are able to speak in different languages, describing things that happened tens or hundreds of years ago. One famous case, almost 500 years ago in Italy, Rabbi Aryeh Mimodina, Rabbi Yehuda Aryeh Mimodina, a huge Kabbalist, rabbi and a doctor in Italy, in Venice, did not believe in reincarnation. Until one day, something happened in his neighborhood. Who wrote it in his book? The Chida, Rabbi Azulai, 300 years ago. Also a huge Kabbalist in Morocco. He writes about Rav Aryeh Mimodina. He says, his neighbor called him, Rabbi, I have a little baby. He's very sick. He's only 1 month old. I don't know if he will survive. 6 months later, there was the last moments of this baby. She called the rabbi to come around the body and to read Tehillim, the parts. That's what we do when a Jew is about to die, lo aleinu. And he looked at the boy, shrinked completely, very skinny. Little boy, 6 months old only. Do you know today in the world a 6 month old baby that is able to speak? I never saw. The baby put his hand on his face and screamed, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, and he died. 6 months old. And this is what he wrote in his book. It says, from this moment, I had no answer to those who always told me that there was reincarnations. I saw it myself. And he changed all the arguments he made before, from negative to positive. One picture is like 1,000 words, yeah? So in his eyes. These cases didn't only happen in the Jewish world. In Portugal, one baby, also the same age, screamed, Viva the name of the king. Who is this king? It wasn't the king yet, it was just a person. A year later, this person became the king of Portugal. And this baby announced his name and died. Baby. There are cases like this, that little kids were able to speak. The Torah give us an example of reincarnation in many, many places. Like Moshe Rabbeinu was reincarnation of Hevel that was murdered by Cain. And Cain was reincarnated in Itro, Jethro, the son-in-law, the father-in-law of Moshe, which gave him his daughter Zipporah to be his wife, to make it up that he murdered him in the previous life. It's all connected. Samson, the prophet Samson, Samson the hero. For those who saw the movie, Samson and Delilah. Samson, who was Samson? Who was it? So the Gemara says like this, the Torah called him Shimshon. This is Vayishlach Hashem et Yerubal ve'et Badan. Chazal, our sage is telling us, Badan is Samson. Why all of a sudden Chazal calling him Badan, Be'et Daled Nun? Because this is Nadav, the son of Aaron. Reverse. Badan is Nadav. Samson, in his previous life, was Nadav, the son of Aaron. Why the son of Aaron? Those two sons that were killed as the sacrifice with no permission, Nadav and Avihu, this is what we read in Yom Kippur in Shul, they passed away. And he came back in the body of Samson. Why? Nadav didn't want to get married. He said, I cannot find one Jewish female that deserves that I will marry her. And his generation. I cannot find. And he died single. What was his punishment? A goyish lady, Delilah, made him into her slave, blinded him, made him grinding, make him became like a donkey. You didn't want to marry the kosher Jewish girls. What's going to be your end? What happened to him? Delilah, you know the story. This is just an example how it works, reincarnations. They put him in jail. What symbolizing his correction? When he was Nadav, the Torah tells us that he was drunk when he went to make the sacrifice. Wine. What killed him in his new life? Wine. She let him drink wine. And then he told the story that his hair is his power, the secret. And she shaved his head and he lost all his power. For those who never heard the story. And then the Philistines put him in jail and tortured him for years. Until he knocked down the whole stadium and killed more than 3,000 goyim with him. And that was his end. Reincarnation. Torah described it. We don't need scientists for that. All the serious scientists today, Dr. Stevenson and others, bringing thousands of flood, this is the word here, flood of evidence that leaves no doubt that every person here almost lived here in a previous life in a different body. This is shocking information. Pay attention. It's very common in Israel, the Arab, the Druze, it's not exactly Arabs, the Druze, they're faithful to Israel, supposedly. And it's very common by them that kids remember their previous life without hypnosis. Just in a regular day, they remember and they begin to speak things that happened to them in their previous life. Every rule that God made is in creation, He also made an exception to the rule. In order for us to recognize the brilliance of the rule, we sometimes need to see that things don't work, to appreciate when it's working. If not, we will never appreciate anything. God made every individual unable to remember his previous life. Why? It eliminates the free choice. If you know what's your correction, then there's no rush. You can be weak at 70 years. The last year, you make your correction and finish. That's not what God wanted. That's why we don't remember anything about our previous life. But for every few million people today in the world, we have an individual here and there that remember his previous life. I will bring two cases. One of them, I even have the movie that was filmed by the Israeli secular TV, not religious, in the primetime news for over 10 minutes in the primetime news. Arab kid, Druze, that remember his previous life and stand next to the grave of his body from his previous life. an Israeli soldier, Druze, that died in Lebanon, age 37. And this is how the story goes. When he was 3 years old, he started to say to his parents, Az. Nobody knew who was Az. When he was 7 years old, one day he comes to his parents and says, take me to my wife. 7 years old. Say, God, we have a crazy baby, crazy boy. They took him to the number one psychiatrist in Israel, French woman, specialist. She checked him for months. She wrote a review. Not only is normal, he's above normal. Perfect kid. He has no mental problems. As he continued to say, one day he came to his father. It's film in a movie. He said, take me to my wife. I show you the way. The father told him, okay, get into the car. They drove to a village in Israel, Arab village. Druze live there today. They came to a street. They knocked on the door. A 44-year-old woman, covered her hair with a white cover, opened the door. And he said, hi, I am your husband, Adel, whatever his name was. Of course, what is she going to think? It's a candy camera. They're making a show, you know. So he says, wait, don't get nervous. I will prove you who I am. He entered the house. She sees the Israeli TV. They let him in the house. He recognized the house right away. This is the bathroom, this is the room right away. Then he said, wait. When I was a soldier, how did I die? He said, I was 37 years old and I was in Lebanon. If you remember, I think it was in 1981, the building collapsed. 70 people died. He was there. Right away he died. And right after he died, God put him in a new body and he was reincarnated. And since the death, it's 7 years now. So 37 years from his previous life, plus the 7 years that he lives now, how old is he? 44. If you add both lives together. And the wife is also 44. But she's still alive, in the same body from before. He say, my serial number, every soldier in Israel have a necklace with a serial number that in case he died, it's two parts. They cut one and they bring it into his family to recognize the number. And he said, I put a leather, the bag was full of leathers and my serial number on top of the ceiling like this. In the attic. I'm going to tell you my serial number when I was a soldier. It's 9 digits. He remembers 7. After all, the 7 years. 7 years passed. He remembered 7 digits from the 9 digits from his previous life. It gets better. He took the bag and he took out all the letters he used to send to his wife when he was a soldier. He knew where it is. The next thing, he went to one of the closets and he said, that's where my uniform used to be. They opened it up, the uniform was there, she kept it. Then they say, bring the album of the family. They open up the family album, he named everybody in the album, all the names from previous life. Then they took him to the volleyball court. He used to be a professional volleyball player in a village. And he showed all the players, he knew all of them, and he said, this is where I was playing, with him. Then they show him standing next to his grave from his previous life with the Israeli TV. And believe me, the last thing they want to prove is anything to back the Torah up. But it's an interesting thing. And then, in the end of this article that they made about him, show... What happened? They show how he sits with his cousin, also I think 45 years old, and speaking memories from the past. Remember how we went to that nightclub until the morning? You drank too many beers. 7 years old with a 44 or 45 years cousin of him. But he remembered his life. That's one case. Another case like this in England. One day, a 23-year-old woman opened up the Times in England. London Times, I think. That's the name of that newspaper. This is how the article starts. They show a 23-year-old woman hugging five old people, 60, 70 years old, each one of them. And they ask, in a seminar that they show it, the first time I myself saw it, who is the mother? And everyone pointed at the oldest lady there. They say, no, this is the mother, 23 years old. She's the mother. How come? Let's explain. One day, she opened up the newspaper and she see an address, an ad in the newspaper. This is 23 years after she died from her previous life. What was the ad? Her sons and girls, their children from the previous life, are not tired of looking for her. She had like an Alzheimer or something. She disappeared and they never know what happened to her. She disappeared one day. I think if I'm not mistaken, she fell into a Chevy on the side of the road and she drowned. So she looks at the place. She recognized the address. She even recognized the name. The number was a different number. She called up the place and an old person picked up the phone and she said, hey, I see you're looking for your mother. I'm your mother. And of course he say, ma'am, we don't have time for jokes. It's a serious matter. She said, wait, don't hang up. Remember I took you to doctor such and such and then I bought you ice cream after? Silent on the other line. How does she know? Who are you? Don't make jokes. Just give me a chance to meet you. You can ask me all the questions in the world. If I fail, let me go. If I prove that I'm your mother, so but how can you be your mother? It sounds like a girl. She said, yes, I'm 23 years old, but I remember my previous life. Every one of us, by the way, has moments like this. It's called deja vu. You remember moments from your previous life, you just don't see the connection. I had a neighbor in Israel. She went to Europe, to Germany. And when she came back from Germany, all excited, she went nuts. What happened? When she got to the train station, she knew the town from A to Z, and she was with a group. She told them, there's a store there, there's a shul there, there's a train station over there, there's a camp used to be over there. She knew everything. Once she saw the town, she recognized everything. It's interesting. That means she was a Holocaust victim or survivor, I don't know, in a previous life, but she was in a camp in Germany, somewhere, in Auschwitz, I don't know where it was. But it's interesting. Things like this happen a lot. So this British woman was, they call a group of people, reliable people, and they ask her 100 personal questions, and 97 of them she answered correct. Dates, birthdays, questions that only the mother could have known. And in the end, they took a picture together. One shocking story, and then we move on. Indika Gonreta from Sri Lanka was born in 1962. Professor Jan Stevenson was checking this case from 1968, 37 years ago, and published his conclusion in the newspaper ASPR in 1974. This is the details. Indika started to talk when I was 2 years old. In age three, he started to describe his previous life as a wealthy man that lives in a mansion in the town of Matra, in the southern beach of Sri Lanka. He described his home, his elephants, his Mercedes car, his servant, and all the other animals he has in his mansion, and his personal driver from previous life. He's 3 years old. He begins to talk. His father was listening to this story. And after a while, you know, he moves on with his life. Later, Dr. Stevenson decided to do something with this information. And he went and did a complete investigation. He went to India, and he went to Sri Lanka, and he knocked on the door where this person claimed he lived in his previous life. And filmed the whole house. And who used to live there? Exactly the person who this kid claimed he used to be. Mr. K.G. Verizinga. That was his name in his previous life. He owned elephants. The person that lives there gave him all the information, as the boy said, about his previous life. One woman, Shanti, in India, 1926, the same story. She was 3 years old. She claimed that she wanted to visit her husband, Kaider Nath. I make long story short, they took her to the house. She broke in. She said, I'll never forgive you, you marry another woman. You promise me after I die, you'll never marry another woman. A little girl. She went to a tree in the backyard and she started to dig. Her husband was standing there very nervous. She said, they asked him, do you know what she's doing? She said, I guess she's looking for the money she hides over there. But I took it. And she dig, she said, it cannot be. I hide it right there. Then he started to have tears. And he realized that this is his wife from the previous life. She knew everything about the house. Where is the money? She screamed. He said, I took it. 24 facts in this story, nobody was able to contradict. And they wrote final conclusion. Shanti used to be who she claims, and this is her husband, which is still alive. When she got to the train station, then, they put her husband mixed with hundreds of people to confuse her. And she pointed at him. That's the one. She said, no, you made a mistake. That's not the person. That's not Kaider. This is Kaider. She said, no. You're telling me? This is a little girl. That's my husband. So every rule has an exception to the rule. That means God made here and there people like this. Why? To wake us up. When you read it in the Torah, you have no doubts. Life has a purpose. What's the purpose? Correction, as they all testify. How do you correct your soul? Following the Torah. What happens if you don't? You lose big time. The Torah is full of warnings. Positive, negative. Im telchu bechukotai, if you follow my laws and orders, there's a list of blessings and rewards. If you're not, there's a list of punishments and curses. It can be an happy end, it can be a tragedy end. Based on what it will be determined, based on your free choice. So the Torah says, Re'eh anochi noten lifnechem hayom et ha'chaim ve'et ha'tov, et ha'mavet ve'et ha'ra u'vacharta b'chaim. Here I put today in front of you the life and the good, the dead and the bad, and you should choose the life. Choose the truth. Don't live in illusion. Don't follow the way of the non-Jews, the Goyim. Don't follow all these phony theories out there. The truth is the same truth regardless of how many followers. And it will always be the truth, because the truth of God is only one. Cannot be two. We happen to be Jews, and we're very lucky. We're very lucky, but some of us do not appreciate, do not cherish the gift we got. And every day that passed will never return. And time is running out. And in the end, it's just a matter of time. We regret badly everything we did. As I described some of this goyim, I did not achieve anything. A goy. A goy doesn't have, his obligation is not even 5% of ours. He has only 7 obligations. That's it. We have much more than him. A Jew is a different league, different category. What would we say when we reach the moment of no return? Before it happens, we want to make sure we won't be caught, not ready. That's really the purpose of this lecture. Yes, it's scientific evidence, beautiful things, hypnosis, reincarnations. It's beautiful. But what's the purpose behind it? This is a college here. Am I look like a professor? I came to teach about all kinds of things? No. The purpose, for those who didn't get it, is what do you do with this information? You see, everything they found, the scientific world today, everything the scientific world discovers, is clear, black on white, in Jewish old books. Torah, Gemara, Zohar, black on white. And there are much more information in our Torah that they still don't know. They don't know about the court of heaven. God did not tell them because it will eliminate the free choice. If one guy will come and say, I was judged by God, A, B, C, everything, and there will be a million like this, there will not be any fair choice anymore. Everyone will be righteous, of course. That's why God is hiding himself in a creation. And you can find him only in one way. The more you devote it to his Torah, Torah in Hebrew means instructions, for those of you who know. The more you devote it to it, the more you learn it, the more you follow the instructions and the recommendations in the Torah, the better you get in the end. Where does it say? La'atifcha b'acharitecha. To benefit you in your end. When is that end? Not in the material world. It's a joke to think that. Only after. Because the Torah already said, the reward for the mitzvot cannot be given here. In a physical world. In a temporary world, it cannot be given because it's permanent. It's eternity. The world of eternity. What are you going to pay a person for mitzvah he did? Give him a car? The wicked people, however, the Torah says, pay the wicked people as they wish. What's their dream? Car. Nice houses. Clothes. Nice wife. Fame. Music. Sports. That's their dream. And since every wicked person has some mitzvot, some good things that he did, God owes him. When will he pay him? Here. Where does it say it in the Torah? Maybe I made it up. Black on white. Meshalem la'rasha'el panav la'avido. This is what it says. I'm the strict God paying the wicked people cash to their face to destroy them. I will not delay their payment. This is clear what it says in the Torah. I will pay them cash to finish everything I owe them. Do we want to be in this category, God forbid? Or in the first one? Do you want to be penny wise, dollar foolish? You don't find that many people that have a $1 million check post-dated for a week from Citibank and they're willing to cash it for a dollar or $1,000. They wait a week for the $1 million, right? Imagine a person say, here is $1 million certified by the government. Certified. I need now cash. Give me $1,000, take the $1 million. You would hospitalize them immediately. It's not normal. But we are like this. Why? We want right now. God does not give me what I deserve. Where is it? Give me, I need. And that's why a lot of people make mistake. And it's a mistake that will cost big time. I will finish with one thing. That's the fifth. It's called the book. An interesting thing that two souls can enter in one body. That's called the book. I don't want to go into the details how it's possible based on the Torah. There's no time for that. But I will just start from the end. It's reality that in some cases, the people that we may think they're mental and they're crazy, they're really not crazy. This is people that through their lifetime, another spiritual soul entered their body and now there are two people in one body. Like two captains in one plane. And one is pushing left and one is pushing right. And they're speaking in two different accents, sometimes in complete two different voices. And in previous generations, in a Kabbalist book, we have hundreds of cases like this. In time of Chafetz Chaim, Rav Yehuda Ftaya 60 years ago, in the time of the Gemara 2,000 years ago, hundreds of years ago, there are many books that describe this kind of events. What do we see? That the rabbis were begging that person who enters the body to leave and to leave the person alone. And they didn't want. Why didn't they want? Sometimes it took weeks until they were convinced to leave. Why? Because the part of the punishment of the wicked people, as the Torah says, ואת נפש הרשע יקלענה בכף הקלע. There's a sentence that describes that God takes wicked people, which is worse than hell. Worse than hell. And he takes their soul and makes the soul be in movement in a space with bad, cruel angels around it all the time. And it's flying around in a space. It's called kaf hakela. Like a slingshot. And in a very, very rare cases, just when a Jew curses, or when he throws something when he's angry, if that soul of the wicked person is right above him, the way the Torah teaches us, that wicked person has a second that he can enter that body. And now there are two souls there.
He doesn't want to come out because he's protected inside. The punishment that he gets from those cruel angels are only walking spiritual to spiritual. They cannot hurt him when he's in a body. That's why they don't want to come. So if you read all those books that describe the conversation, the dialogues, the rabbis had, Rabbi Elchanan Wasserman, 100 years ago, it's a famous book, until they took it out, you're going to find something mutual. They do not want to leave the body because they're afraid of the punishment. The only way they agree is they make a deal that the rabbi will correct their soul by saying Kaddish for them and read Mishnayot for them. It's the only the way they agree to live. If not, they don't live. And when they leave, the rabbi is teaching us, they ask them to leave from the little finger in between the flesh and the finger. Or in the leg, in the toes, the same, in a small toe. Why? Because there are parts in the body. If they go through that part, the person will die. And it's interesting, because they describe that when they leave the body, the area that they leave the body from becomes swollen like a balloon. And then they leave. In some places, they say, open the window, I'm going to leave. So, Rav Yehuda Ftaya, when he came from Iraq to Israel, in the beginning of the century, the previous century, all the crazy people in Israel, that people hospitalized, he used to go and take away the dibukim out of them. They became normal to whoever he could. Somebody that speaks to himself and changes voice and moves his face left and right, and one moment he smiles, the next moment he cries, not necessarily is crazy. It could be two people in one box. One wants to smile, one wants to cry. One speaks in this language, one speaks in the other language. And that's well known in Judaism. It's called Dibuk. So, I think it's enough. I mean, I cut a lot of the things that I could show. But there's one last thing. Sometimes there are dead people that get permission to view themselves to living people, like me and you. In one famous case in Philadelphia, Dr. Mitchell, a doctor from Philadelphia, got a phone call in the middle of the night. I'm sorry, not a phone call. Dr. Mitchell got someone ringing the bell in his home. He opened up the door and he saw a little girl, very worried. She said, my mother is very sick. You have to come help her. So it was a freezing night, snowing. What can he do? He was about to sleep. But his conscience doesn't let him ignore the girl. The girl started to cry, of course. He got dressed and he started to follow her. When he got to the house of the mother, he enters in. And she said, how did you know, doctor, to come get me, to take care of me? I thought it's my aunt. I was alone here in the house. Nobody is here. So what do you mean? You send your daughter, no? She said, no. What daughter? I only had a daughter. She passed away. A month ago, she passed away. So what do you mean? She is like this, blonde. This is how she looked, blue eyes. Yes, that's my daughter. She came and called me. So that's one case. There's hundreds of cases, of course, we don't have time for all of them. They were registered. Those cases. One other case. There are some cases that they don't get permission to view themselves, but they speak in the ear of people. One guy, in a place I used to give lecture a year ago, very reliable, a much righteous person. I'm sure, I trust him 1,000,000%. He told me one time, listen, twice in my life something happened. One time a person came to me, I don't know who he is, I heard his voice. He's telling me about one person in my right ear. Okay? The next time it happened, he was telling me about the left ear. And then since then it happened a few times. When I hear it in my right ear, it's good news about that person. When I hear it in my left ear, the next day these people die. One woman called me up, Bukharian lady from this community, probably some of you may know her. She didn't want to say her name, She had a 16 years old daughter, and for a few years, her bedroom is in upstairs, in a second floor. Every night she comes to sleep, she sees a girl sitting, a spiritual image, sitting on her bed. In the beginning, they were very nervous because she keeps calling them, she's here again. Later, they saw that nothing really is happening, and they live with that. Until an unbelievable thing happened. What happened? She called me all nervous. It was in the middle of the day. It happened last night. She was nervous from the night. She was trying to reach me from the morning. I'm not available. Finally, she reached me. She tell me now the story. And I say, okay, so if you say it's for years, what makes you calling now? She said, last night she came, the girl with another man with a hat. She couldn't see clearly his face. But after a few minutes, he was trying to choke her, and she started to scream. And me and my husband ran up to the attic, and we saw her moving in bed, and we don't see anything. And it's like, mamash, like someone is choking her. And she screamed, and you hear that the voice doesn't come out of her throat. So we turned the lights, and we started to scream. Then it stopped, and she started to cry. And she explained what happened, and we don't know what to do. So I sent her to someone to take care of that problem. Now, things like this happening all the time. It's amazing. One woman called, and she said that her daughter, while she's sleeping, she speaks in a different language. Nobody understands. In the middle of her sleep. And she's afraid that she has a dibuk, what I just spoke about. Because she's religious, this woman. She knows about it. So I told her, you know, I wanted to relax her. I told her, hey, don't jump too fast, you know. I asked Rabbi Ben Chaim what to do, because he knows a lot of books. And he said, tell her, I can help her, but to save time, she has to record what her daughter says. And after we understand what she speaks about, it will be easier to take care of it. So I transfer her to him. The truth, I don't know what ever happened to her, because 2 weeks after I was asking, and she still didn't contact him, so I don't really know what happened. But there are cases like this all the time. I mean, in the beginning I was excited to hear it, but I already heard it a few times. And the scientific world already writes about it, articles and all kinds of things. So, one other person came to his father and told him, I will take you to my murderer. His son was murdered. And the same day, when the police didn't know what happened, he told him, drive here, drive left, drive right. My body is in a trunk. And he called the police, and they called the guy in 7-Eleven. The guy with the car was inside. The police came and called him. And it's a famous story. In America, right here. His son told him where to go. So, you know, there's interesting. Oh, that's an amazing story. One father wrote a will to his goy. Will Chapin, that's his name, in 1927. In North Carolina. He also lived in a nice house in North Carolina. He died in 1921. 6 years after he died, 1927, the mansion that he lived in was finally given to his son, one of his sons, Marshall, that was his name, and his wife and their 3 children. Oh, I'm sorry, and Mr. Chapin's wife and his other 3 sons got nothing in court. Why? Because the judge said, what can I do? That's what your father wanted, that Marshall will get everything. In 1925, 4 years after his death, the spirit of Chapin started to come to one of his other sons. He sees him in a dream, he sees him in all kinds of visions. What does he want from him? He comes wearing the long old coat that he used to wear when he was alive, in his image. In his second appearance, he say, you see this coat I'm wearing? It's in a house. Remember, it's not real coat, it's just a picture. Inside, there's a pocket that I sewed. Rip it, and inside you're going to find a note. That was the message. Of course, the boy was curious. He went.
And he opened up that coat and he found a new wheel, another wheel. Inside there was actually a note. The note says, you want to find a new wheel? Go to chapter 27 in the book of Genesis, in the old Bible of my father. That means their grandfather. They had an old Bible. Remember, we are talking about 80 years ago. Forest Hills Garden was just made at that generation. So what happened? He said, that's when you're going to find the new will. He opened up that Bible and he found the new will that was signed with witnesses in a later date of the first will that Marshall had. They opened it up with witnesses, and it was written in 1919. That was the second will, canceling the first one and sharing all his property equally to his wife and children. They took the will into a court and they reversed the old decision and they shared it to all of them. And even Marshall did not resist. So something like this. I respect Dad's word. And I have other cases. The time is running out. One woman here in Long Island, blind from age 18, was able to give all kinds of things that a blind person cannot tell. But that's enough for today. I thank you very much for coming. If there's any questions, I will answer. If not, thank you very much. Yeah.